Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What up, Fightful fam, and welcome to 1-2 Punch. Player one, Shaquille Majui. Player two, Jason Hagholm, my fellow Canadian. How's it going, dude?
Hey, man, it's going well. I mean, we got ourselves another pay-per-view weekend amongst us before. I think we're gonna get that 1 week break, which I think is gonna be kind of nice to enjoy Easter and not have to worry about who's weighing in, who's missing weight, while we can all gorge ourselves on some ham, turkey, and of course a lot of Easter chocolate.
Yes, perhaps I can cut down on my coffee intake next week. Guys, welcome to 1-2 Punch Special, a free edition on Fightful MMA's YouTube as well as our Patreon. I know if you're a longtime viewer of the show, it hasn't been that long. It's only been 1 week that we've been exclusively on Patreon, but because this is a pay-per-view weekend and for all upcoming pay-per-views, we will do like a once monthly live stream for all. If you enjoy what we do, head over to FightfulSelect.com. Okay, guys, if this is your first time on the program, welcome. This is 1-2 Punch. It's news talk, but on a win-lose-draw system. What that means is we're going to highlight the week's biggest winners and losers before drawing up a little preview for UFC 260 Miocic Ngannou Dos. There is our snazzy animated intro. Boom. Quick reminder, guys, if you are here, please hit subscribe, tap the notification bell, leave a like on this video. All that goes such a long way to helping our channel grow. A lot of fun content for UFC 260. Fighters reacting to Tyron Woodley and Mike Perry rapping. Uriah Faber rating the best and worst haircuts in MMA. Vicente Luque ranking all of Tyron Woodley's UFC opponents by quality. A lot of interesting alternative news content there for you, but that is enough of me shilling. Let's get to the action. Jason, you and I were talking about it a little bit off the air, but rough week to beat Israel Adesanya, a stretch of bad luck lately after, one of the most remarkable rises in MMA history. We have Israel Adesanya, as of today, being dropped reportedly by BMW New Zealand. They were set to roll out some sort of campaign with him as the star on Monday. But Izzy made some, was sort of trash-talking Kevin Holland and said he was going to rape Kevin Holland. That statement backfired against him. You had the Deputy Prime Minister of New Zealand shunning him. You had fans, media shunning him, especially media in New Zealand. And now we have word that he has been dropped as the BMW spokesperson, in a sense. He did apologize. That apology was not enough to save him from this axing. Do you think this was the right call by BMW?
Well, we live in such a, you got to be careful with your words type of a world right now. And corporations alone aren't going to take kindly to anytime you're using the word rape or I'm going to rape you, whether it's, in terms of fight speak or in general. Like, I can totally see why BMW is going to do that. Like, we've seen many corporations shun athletes for, saying sometimes even less than that. And it's a big blow for Adesanya, who's obviously also got a sponsorship deal with Puma. So we have to see what Puma's response is going to be, because he is now the pitch man for that clothing brand as they're kind of going on a relaunch. But you knew this was going to come when you make a comment like that, and BMW's looking out for themselves, as much as, it's great to have that athlete be on board, and Adesanya is a great personality. Sure, apologizing is one thing, but it also kind of looks like you're just saying you're sorry because you lost the sponsorship deal, not so much more for the comment being said. And I see where BMW is coming from, and I think all in all, I think they acted correctly.
Yeah, you know, I don't really want to get into the endless debate about cancel culture, where the public should and shouldn't have, you know, power over people's careers, but the reality of it is they do. And Israel Adesanya, when he begins to start making these relationships with brands and third parties, needs to keep in mind that now, in a sense, he represents these other businesses. And so when he says and does things that may negatively reflect upon those third parties, it could impact those third parties bottom line, and ultimately, you know, they're here to make money. So whether I think Izzy's apology is sincere, whether or not I think he should have lost this deal with BMW is sort of moot. The point is, when you're in business with people, you have to keep their best interests in mind. And, you know, moving forward, I think Izzy's going to be a little more conscious of the ramifications of the things he says. Of course, you don't want to see him lose the shine that makes him him, but I don't think that's a real concern. I think Izzy can be the same charismatic, cerebral, entertaining personality, but maybe keep the sexual assault comments on the side, you know?
Yeah, I think he can still be the same guy cutting, you know, entertaining promos, being entertaining. And obviously what also sells Izzy is when he steps in the cage and fights, and you know, he's going to stay at middleweight now, and that's going to be the thing. But that's now besides the point where, you know, especially the past couple of weeks, we've seen, you know, some incidents where people lost their jobs, like the Buffalo Sabres. They had their in-house announcer. He lost his job for comments he made about, you know, comparing racial skin tones to toast on his radio show. So you have to be careful. And I know cancel culture is a thing, and we're maybe canceling things that have no need to be canceled and should be used as a history purpose, but you can't be making those kind of comments where the brand's going to always look out for the brand more than you. And exactly. Adesanya's learned that lesson the hard way. But I'm more interested to see what happens with Puma, because he's, as I said, he's the face of their brand now. And if there's going to be any disciplinary actions, or if he ends up maybe losing that deal with Puma.
Yeah, and I want to go to Joseph Boza in the comments very quickly. Hi, Joseph. Nice to have you back here on the YouTube live stream. He says, the New Zealand sports minister wants UFC to punish Adesanya. I haven't seen anything about this yet. Have you, Jason?
I have not, no. I just saw the story actually today as well.
But let's touch on that. It appears, at least, that the New Zealand government, governing body, seems to be quite progressive and quite left-leaning. I don't want to make any preconceived judgments about New Zealand's politics because I don't know. But the fact that, you know, first the deputy prime minister publicly makes a statement about it, and now you have the sports minister allegedly seeking punishment from the UFC, it's interesting. But we're not, and the UFC's not going to do anything about this. They have let a lot worse slide. And if nothing else, if anything, I will respect the fact that Dana White sticks to his word about this. Do I agree with it all the time? Definitely not. But at least he's a man of his word. I don't think he's going to penalize Adesanya any more than he has Colby Covington or Mike Perry in the past.
Yeah, definitely not. Especially Mike Perry dropping blatant N-bombs and both, you know, in video and in text form.
So knocking out old people.
Yeah, knocking out old people. Like, as bad as the comment was, I don't see the UFC doing anything about it, because Dana has his own views on certain things, and he's definitely not going to punish one of his stars because a government figure in another country that the UFC can't even run shows at for the foreseeable future makes a comment about that they should do something about it.
All right, that was our big loser. Maybe let's stick with the losers before we move on to the winners section. Is there anyone that sticks out in your mind, Jason, before we roll back to me?
Well, I think if we're going to stick to the comments, I would say Sean O'Malley on the Ariel Helwani podcast this week where Ariel asked him if he regretted, you know, having Casey Kenney make the comment about, you know, Megan Anderson. And he really just seemed very tone deaf on the whole situation, where he didn't really understand what went wrong. And just like the smirk on his face added to just how bad of a look it was for that comment. Like, just not understanding that you're degrading a female, a then and female employee, and then not seeing how big of a deal it could be because now she's no longer with the UFC. But yeah, it's just Sean once again taking another step towards the sugar show turning into the sour show.
Very nice. I will say I really did not like any of the way that he addressed the Megan Anderson situation. The ex-employee line was kind of hard, though, I can't lie. That was a good dig. I don't appreciate it. I don't agree with it, but that was a good dig. Yeah, I mean, listen, O'Malley, at this point, I think he's shown his true colors. Yellow, red, green, blue, the whole hair dye. The gimmick was fun at first. I'm sure it's still going to resonate with a portion of the audience in a way that it doesn't with me, and that's fine. I have no qualms about it. But let me tell you this. I had that UFC hair video, right, where I had Uriah Faber reacting to a bunch of good and bad haircuts, and we had Sean O'Malley and Brian Ortega on the cover because, you know, both have famous sets of hair for very different reasons, and both were competing on UFC 260, so to me it was a no-brainer. I was watching Google Trends waiting to see, okay, at what point will Sean O'Malley's name start sort of ticking up in trend so I can hop on that early wave, get a few more clicks. And bro, it probably has now that we're at fight week, but as of late last week, no one was looking for the guy. I think the way he handled that Chito Vera loss has really hurt his stock. Probably not amongst the ones who love him, but amongst people like myself, perhaps, who are more kind of casual admirers of his. Thumbs down, man. His inability to accept that loss is, you know, maybe it's him trolling, maybe it's him sort of manifesting this gimmick, but it just kind of came off as sore loser slash just blind vibes. Like, if you don't understand why you lost that fight, it's kind of painful for me to watch, and I think that's kind of where we're at, because there hasn't been a whole lot of buzz for Sean O'Malley. Think about how, dude, before the Chito Vera fight, they were running, the UFC was running promo videos comparing Sean O'Malley to LeBron James. We are so far removed from that now. I don't get O'Malley's new iteration, but it's not for me. And according to the analytics, it's not for a lot of people that I think were ready to jump on the bandwagon had he performed more ably against Chito Vera.
Yeah, I think, just as you said, handling a loss by saying it's not a loss, I'm still undefeated in my mind. If you kept that personally or privately to himself, like, okay, I get that the fighter mentality, I'm still undefeated or whatnot, but publicly going out and just looking like a sore loser and a sulking, you know, baby pretty much, and being so delusional about it, and then you add on what he did on Ariel's show about the, you know, the comments and really showing no regret for being involved with it, or, you know, I didn't say them. Well, no, you didn't, but you were involved with it. And it was your, I believe it was his podcast it that the comment podcast. Was that came on. So there is some responsibility that needs to be held. And as well, especially from a new dad, like, little maturity needs to be shown in Sean O'Malley. And we'll see what also ends up happening with him when he steps in the cage tomorrow night against, you know, Thomas Almeida. So it's a bit of a test.
I think he's got a good shot.
I do too.
Yeah, to close on O'Malley, man, like, super entertaining, has figured out a good business model, knows how to market himself. I'm not going to take any of that away from him. He's clearly witty, he clearly has business smarts, but this is the dude who's on his show saying, if you can't do heroin once like a man, you're weak. Like,
whoa.
Like, I don't know, man. O'Malley, sharp in the cage, not entirely convinced that he's up to snuff. This is the problem when you give people a platform and they start going on about stuff they know nothing about. You know what I mean? It is what it is. I'm excited to see him back in the cage because I do think he's a great talent, great grappling, great striking. And hopefully with a win here, the wind on his sails, we can get back to a more palatable Sean O'Malley that's maybe not so low-key bitter coming out of this Chito Vera fight. All right. With that said, looking at the clock, we're at about 15 minutes through. So probably a good time to transition to the winners of the week. Quick reminder, guys, if you can please hit subscribe, tap the notification bell, leave a like on this video. All that good stuff helps us out a lot. Hey, hit us up in the live chat. We'll get to all your questions and comments. It lets me know that the stream is working and I don't have to do this like a total numbskull. So thank you for that. All right, winner, winner, chicken dinner. Let me start here. Misha Tate is back. This was an unexpected treat. I'm a cupcake fan, takedown fan, whatever nickname she's going by these days. And I thought that although her role had been sort of significantly reduced due to the ongoing pandemic, I thought she was still a one championship executive. Is that no longer the case?
I'm not sure. I technically still think she is a one championship employee, but I guess if she couldn't really or didn't want to travel out to whether it was the Philippines, which is their head office, I believe is in with, you know, being a mom of some young children, I would get that. But, you know, like Misha's only 34 years old, right? So her coming back, it's a shock. But also the women's division needs some names. So if the UFC can found a way, which they obviously did, as she's now set to return in July, I believe. So like, I'm okay. I'm interested to see what she can do. Plus one win, you know, gets her a title shot against like Amanda Nunes.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it's going to be. They need some names. They obviously kind of want to keep Nunes and Shevchenko away because they fought twice. But if they had that fight, they kind of want their legacies to grow a little bit. I'm all for Misha Tate coming back because women's MMA, especially right now in the UFC, they've lost the 145-pound division, which we knew would happen. I believe you and I talked about that on the stream last pay-per-view, actually. So, I mean, this isn't a surprise that they lost that and they bring in another name. And who has a lot of potential still? Like, as I said, only 34, a very talented fighter, has a great wrestling base, and can still make waves, I think.
Agreed. You know, she said in the media after the fact that you know, she's here to be champion again. That's always kind of worrisome to with me. One of the best conversations I ever had about fighters retiring was with Severe MMA's Sean Sheehan on the show, and it was ahead of the Anderson Silva Uriah Hall fight, and we talked about like when is the right time for someone to retire. And what Sean said, which I very much now echo, is, oh, I'm on the wrong person here. There we go. Hi, guys. Is that, what are you trying to accomplish, right? And realistically, what's the likelihood of you getting there? Now, if you, as a fighter, are someone whose priority is to put on fun fights, exciting matchups, live out sort of a Donald Cerrone-esque legacy, hey, you can fight for a damn long time because there's a lot of options for you. There's contendership fights, as championship fights, there are, you know, sort of legend fights against other people of name value. There's stylistic matchups that you can be marketed with. But if your goal, like Anderson Silva's was, is to recapture a title, well, if you can't beat Uriah Hall, let's be honest, you're probably not going to do that. And that is no discredit to Uriah Hall, but look at where he's at in the rankings and look at all the other killers there as well. Hall could very well become a UFC middleweight champion, but if you can't beat Uriah Hall, that chapter of your career is kind of closed. So to me, the idea of Misha Tate coming back with the goal of getting another Amanda Nunes fight is concerning because she's had this long layoff. She's no younger, and we saw what happened the first time they fought. It wasn't super competitive. And let's be honest, she was losing 5 rounds of that Holly Holm fight before she got what is, for me, one of the greatest moments in UFC history, that takedown and that rear naked choke finish. I think Misha Tate has never been the best female fighter. And to think that she's going to come back now after a 4-plus-year layoff, get a win and go up against Amanda Nunes, who is at the prime of her run as two division UFC champion. I just don't think it's realistic. I'd be happy to be proven wrong. I think Misha's great. I'm a fan of hers. Her, you know, her star presence outside of the cage, her fight IQ inside of the cage, but it just doesn't seem like a realistic goal. I wish she just came back and said, "Yo, I just want to fight. Put me up with some other, you know, run back the Holly Holm fight. Put me in there against some other legends and let's have a good time. Let's make some money." I don't know about this Amanda Nunes rematch.
Well, I don't know about it right away, though. As I said, if she wins this fight upcoming against Marion Renault, she's going to get the title fight. But I mean, what else is she supposed to say, right? Like, you can sure say, "I just want to have fun fights and whatnot." But if you're coming back at that age, the goal always, and coming back in general, shouldn't the goal always be for a championship? Because if you're not in it for a title or anything of that sort, then really, what are you in the sport for? Just for fun or whatever? I mean, she's made some decent money, and obviously the one paycheck didn't hurt her at well. But if you're coming back to compete, the goal should always be a championship. And I think, you know, she hasn't taken that many serious injuries. Sure, the layoff will be a thing, but get one fight, maybe two. I can see her fighting for the title. Do I think she'd win against Amanda Nunes right now? No, but I think she could maybe make the adjustments that she didn't make in the first fight when she lost the title at UFC 200. And could make it interesting. I mean, crazier things have happened in combat sports. I mean, George Foreman was heavyweight champion at 45 years old. So who's to say like a 37-year-old Misha Tate or a 36-year-old Misha Tate as a UFC women's bantamweight champion can't happen?
All right, let me – fair enough. I would like to counter your point about the goal being the title. Now, if we – were in an industry like the NBA, the NFL, where these fighters were being paid enough to focus solely on their goal of, you know, creating a legacy, being the best they can be, completely on board with you. But I do want to read you, because I bring this up because I just had a really interesting chat with Kama Worthy earlier this week. He fights at UFC 260. And I want to read you the quote, because he didn't agree with Michael Chandler getting a UFC lightweight title shot after just one fight in the promotion. And so when I asked him, okay, well, what do you think about Dustin Poirier not getting the fight? He said, okay, well, it appears that Dustin Poirier...
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. If you had an extra hour in your day, what is the first thing that you would do? Read a book, take a nap, play some video games, do something for a friend, volunteer? A lot of us spend our lives wishing that we had more time, but the question is, time for what? And if it was unlimited, how would you go about using it? The best way to squeeze that special thing into your schedule is to know what's important for you and to make it a priority. And therapy can help you find what matters to you so you can do more of it. Therapy is so valuable. It's gotten me through some tough times, really helped me reflect on things that are important, specifically with BetterHelp. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be the convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. This is so beneficial when you've got that crammed schedule and you can't even imagine finding that extra hour. You can do it all from home. Fill out a brief questionnaire, get matched with a licensed therapist, and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/Fightful today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/Fightful. It's so flexible and it can help you find that social sweet spot with BetterHelp. That's BetterHelp.com/Fightful.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
It wants the Conor McGregor trilogy fight instead. So here's what Kama said. That would be my approach if I was Dustin Poirier. Who gives a shit about having a world title? Daniel Cormier said it best. He said, "You can't pay your mortgage with your world title. Your objective can't be to get the world title. I would love the title, but I'm already the best. I need to be able to take care of my family. My family thinks I'm the best. My daughter is 2.5, and she's going to think I'm the best fighter that ever walked the planet for the rest of her life. I need to make sure they're financially stable. I don't need a piece of metal or plastic to tell me I'm the man. I know I'm the fucking man." I agree with you a lot, Jason, but I just wanted to read that quote because, man, did I enjoy that chat with Kama, and it was a really refreshing take. Now, maybe Kama deep down knows, like, hey, I'm probably not good enough to win a world title. I'm not saying that. He didn't say that, but maybe that's where his head at. But boy, do I love so few. What percentage of fighters end up becoming world champion, right? I love that a guy like Kama can have the mindset of, I am the fucking man. I'm one of the best in the world. Because I'm a UFC fighter and I'm a winning UFC fighter at that, let me do right by me and my family.
Yeah, I mean, look, and as well, we're seeing it right now with Dustin Poirier, right? Like, he could have fought for, Dana White just said to TSN's Aaron Bronstetter, he could have fought for the title, but he chose the McGregor fight because of the paycheck. And, like, he's going to be financially set for probably make the most money with the last fight. Mm-hmm. And now this one upcoming, whether it's in, you know, the summer or fall, whenever the negotiations may be. But I just think Misha doesn't have that mindset. Mm-hmm. I think it all depends as well as the fighter's mindset, right? Like, Dustin wants the money, and because he's fought so hard, and then the title will become a thing. And it seemed always to me like before these McGregor fights were a thing that the title was first and then getting the money was second and being able to do that. But I think Misha, because she got a lot of extra cash probably for hopping over to one, like, for she's sure. pretty set financially. So she can be a tunnel vision fighter for a title. Whereas, you know, her opponent, you know, Marion Renault, maybe working another, like, that's a thing, right? Other fighters in the UFC still work other jobs to financially support themselves. So it can be that way. And I appreciate Kama Worthy for being that honest and open, because sure, there is, you know, a little unevenness with, you know, pay versus, you know, getting a title shot and what have you. But that's the problem with, you know, a sport like MMA and just how the business model's set up, where if a company or promotion feels you can draw and sell to the public a title fight, you're getting it over than being just a solid and good fighter. And I love Kama Worthy. I think he's a great fighter, a great story for him. And I wish him all the best of luck tomorrow night at UFC 260. But I just think that is the vision for a lot of fighters, is the championship, because they see the championship equaling, you know, pay-per-view points. Yeah. And you know, a little bit more bonus money in there, and which is a thing. But a lot of people don't look at, unless you get a personality like an Adesanya or a McGregor as well, that also helps sell pay-per-views.
Yeah, Kama's a smart guy. It was so interesting picking his brand, and he knows how to draw a headline too, man. I did not ask him once. I never once said the words Michael Chandler, yet I somehow end up with the headline quote, "I'd knock Michael Chandler's fucking head off," says Kama Worthy. Great interview, super underrated. And, you know, talking about the business savvy, he said, you know what, I don't have that many more years in my career. I'm getting up there in age. I know how long it takes to get a lightweight title shot because it's such a bloated division if you don't get to bypass the line the way Chandler did. He's like, look, I'm going to fight as much as I can the next few years. Hopefully win myself to a contract that's like 60 to show, 60 to win, and then fight once or twice a year. Worst case, I lose two fights, still get six figures. Best case, mm-hmm. I get near $250,000 out of it annually. So props. It's such an unusual thing to hear from a fighter. And I think the more the culture around fighting changes, you know, shifts away from legacy and more to business, the quicker we're going to expedite a process by which all the fighters can be paid more, because they're all more in tune with what's going on around them. And then we can get to a place where these fighters are being paid as much as they need to be able to focus solely on the pursuit of being great. And I think we're going to see an overwhelming rise in the overall level of MMA. So that's my hope. Like, look at the way, you know, like Drake pays for like a training facility for the Raptors. You know, all these NBA teams have like state-of-the-art facilities and practices, you know, fine-tuning like the tiniest sciences of how to improve every aspect of their game. I'd love to see the money in MMA so that these athletes could have, you know, both their own time as well as a structure around them that allows them to be the very best they can be.
I think we all would. It's just how the sports run, right? I think number one, to even be close to that, you'd have to unionize. All those leagues that have all those fine facilities, they have unions that fought for all of that. And well, MMA is nowhere near close to that. So
I'm on season 5 of Superstore, so I'm very up to date with the union talks. Very quickly in the live chat, someone says, Julia Pena did one hell of a promo on ESPN. He got a shot at Amanda. Hey, like you said, if you're an Izzy, if you're a Connor, I'm not saying Pena's that, but a good promo goes a long way. Even Michael Chandler's Ric Flair impression at UFC 257. I always say this. Guys, just put yourself out there. If Mike Perry and Colby Covington and Henry Cejudo, actually, I like Colby's shtick when he does like the spoilers and stuff. Let's take Henry Cejudo. His whole gimmick is that he's cringy. But do you know why it works? Because we are so devoid of personality in MMA, the barrier for entry is so low. That's why every time I upload a damn Jake Paul video, it trumps everything else that I posted that week. Because it doesn't take a lot. People aren't asking for comedic brilliance. People don't go watch pro wrestling because they want top-notch drama and you know, long-term storytelling. It's a plus. It's a huge plus when we get those things. But that's not the week-in, week-out expectation. You know, just being cohesive and offering something can be enough in MMA. Mike Perry, Henry Cejudo, Sean O'Malley, Colby Covington. These aren't the most charismatic people you ever meet. Have you ever just had a conversation with Colby? He's like a regular guy. It doesn't take much. So guys, put yourselves out there. Come up with some sort of shtick, and I promise it'll pay off. Because all Juliana Pena had to do to go from she's getting a title shot to, yeah, let's give her a title shot, was one good promo.
Just look at Chael Sonnen. Chael Sonnen was a solid mixed martial artist. You know, won some, lost one, but wasn't going anywhere, but put some fights together, and then all of a sudden turned into Roddy Piper or Ric Flair with his promo abilities. Yeah, superstar Billy Graham, actually, to be exact. But and he became one of the biggest names in the history of mixed martial arts, all within like a 2-year span.
Absolutely. Okay, I'm looking at the clock. We should start heading to the UFC 260 preview. Quick reminder, guys, again, hit subscribe, tap the notification bell, leave a like on this video. Hit us up in the live chat. We love hearing from you guys. If you want this show week in and week out, place to do it is FightfulSelect.com. That's where you can sign up for the Patreon. Got a ton of pro wrestling content if you like, as well as this show every week. Super small fee, does a lot to help us grow the platform. And as we move forward, we're going to try and find ways to incorporate more original MMA content into Fightful Select. So make the early investment. It does a lot for us. All right, UFC 260. Let's start with the main event. We're not going to do predictions, but I want, as someone in myself who admittedly is not a great technical analyzer of this sport, I have to rely on the information that is present to me. And one thing about this, because let me say this. Ever since that first Junior Dos Santos fight, I have picked Stipe Miocic in every single one of his fights. Which makes me feel a little bad to say that I'm picking Ngannou this time. And the reason is, like I said, I wouldn't go bet money based on this prediction. But for me and the information I have in front of me, the thing that really worries me is in Stipe Miocic's last three fights, so those would be the Cormier trilogy, because prior to that it was the Ngannou fight. So since that Ngannou fight, Stipe has fought three times, each against Daniel Cormier. He has absorbed 311 strikes, significant strikes. Francis Ngannou, by contrast, in his last three fights has absorbed 11. Or it might even be since the first Stipe fight. So since the first time they fought, Francis Ngannou has absorbed 1/11th of the damage of Miocic. Stipe is getting up there in age. It's a smaller cage. I just worry that, you know, he got knocked down the first Cormier fight. He was losing the second one. Let's not forget. I worry that those wars are just going to do to Stipe in a small way what Carlos Condit versus Robbie Lawler did to those two men.
Yeah, so, I mean, always with a rematch, it's what did each fighter learn about each other, right? So Francis learned about himself. He needed to, you know, get better cardio and, you know, improve a lot, find ways to, you know, stuff and stop takedowns. So he's now training out Extreme Couture in Las Vegas. You know, his takedown defense will be a little bit better. I think he should have a lot better cardio, especially for a guy that, you know, has been in there with Stipe and knows what to do. Stipe, I think, has, you know, made the smart decision to maybe come in a little trimmer just to, if the fights go into championship rounds where he's going to have the cardio to maybe outlast the more bulkier Ngannou. Ngannou weighed in this afternoon at 263 and Miocic weighed in at 234. But I just think Ngannou, I'm picking him to win the fight because I think he learned. He's going to make the adjustments. And I just think the smaller cage are going to come together and it's going to be a way that this guy's going to find a way to hit Miocic and rock him. Like, he's the hardest hitter, arguably, in the UFC and in mixed martial arts. He's got that Tyson aura to him a little bit. And he's brought it back. Like, when in your last three fights, they've been like 45 seconds, 25 seconds, a minute and 11, and like 30 seconds. I think
the total is 1 minute 56 in his last three.
Yeah. So when you're basically, you know, have had three fights within two or four fights within 2 years in under 2 minutes, you brought your aura back. And I think he's going to find a way to, you know, redeem revenge. And he just looks so much more confident and, you know, training in Extreme Couture for not only the wrestling, but he's working with, you know, great striking coaches over at Extreme Couture. I'm picking Ngannou, but if Miocic is to win as he is the underdog, I wouldn't be shocked because he's arguably the best champion in the history of the UFC at heavyweight. And he just finds ways to be spoiler each and every time. So I wouldn't be shocked, but I'm still picking Ngannou.
You're right. It is shocking that this guy keeps getting sort of an underdog status. He is, you said arguably, I don't think there's an argument. He is the greatest heavyweight in UFC history. And then all that's left is the Fedor debate.
Yeah.
He's got the most title defenses. He's got the best resume. He's a modern heavyweight. The way he mixes things up, he's leaner. He's got better head movement. But I will say, and this is sort of I'm guessing this is exactly the sort of argument people made for Ngannou the first time, but especially as Stipe gets up there in age, he absorbs damage, he gets naturally a little bit slower. Man, that's 240, whatever Stipe weighs. That's still a big frame to carry around. And Ngannou just throws those so fast. He throws those punches so fast that we saw Miocic get clipped in all the Cormier fights. We saw him absorb some really hard shots from Ngannou in the first fight. I just worry that you need Optimus Prime kind of chin to take Ngannou shots. He's taken over 300 shots to his face since then, roughly. I'm sure some of them are to the body and legs. I just don't know if he's going to be able to eat them en route to securing those takedowns the way he did the first time.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just the power of the punch. It's what makes heavyweights the most exciting. And Ngannou's got the best in mixed martial arts, so I'm leaning on him. I just think he'll find a way. Especially, and the smaller cage, too, is a factor. They didn't have that style of a cage before. So they're going to have to be forced to come together. It worked out for Miocic against Cormier in the final fight of the trilogy. But I just think you nowhere to run from a big Francis Ngannou.
Well, that's kind of the funny thing, too, right? Because I'm interested to see what the smaller cage means for these two enormous human beings. Because like you suggested on one end, not as much room for Miocic to circle out, maintain range. At the same time, not as much space between Ngannou and the fence. If Miocic can start grappling aggressively, he doesn't have to cross as much distance to sort of get in close on Ngannou. So I'm interested in seeing who benefits more from their environment. All right, last thing, Jason, as we wrap up here. Co-main event, unfortunately, it will no longer be Volkanovski-Ortega. What we have instead was an awesome main card addition. Tyron Woodley versus Vicente Luque. First of all, I'm very happy for Vicente. This spot is well deserved for him. A fight against a guy like Tyron. Tyron Woodley, coming off of 3 consecutive losses, albeit, you know, to the best guys in the welterweight division, Kamaru Usman, Colby Covington, and Gilbert Burns. Here in Vicente, it's finally a guy who, I mean, I guess Gilbert hadn't earned a title shot when he fought Tyron, but appears to be a little bit of a step down, at least from what we know about Vicente right now. If Tyron Woodley loses, is he getting cut from the UFC?
Well, actually, today, Ariel Helwani broke that this is the last fight of his contract in the UFC. So I think he's done, especially if he loses. I think they're not going to re-sign him. And he, if anything, Tyron should test free agency. He's never, ever experienced it because his contract came in from Strikeforce when the UFC bought Strikeforce. So go explore it. There's options with, you know, a PFL in 2022, or obviously Bellator would love to have him in their welterweight division, which needs some names as well. But yeah, I would expect this to be it for him. And I just want to see Tyron go out there and show us what made Tyron Woodley get to that, you know, that welterweight title opportunity. He's got to use his wrestling. He just looked like a guy that's been totally, you know, lost his confidence. You can see it in the Colby fight for sure. You for sure saw it in the Gilbert Burns fight, and especially in the Usman fight. Like, this is a guy that was not really sure of himself, even when he was champion and then trying to get his way back to getting those to title opportunities. And he's got to find a way to go to his bread and butter, use the wrestling. You know, that's what my co-host of my podcast, Jason and the Gentleman, Josh Hill, who's one of the top bantamweights in Bellator, said, got to use his wrestling, go back to there. And that'll maybe open up, find his confidence, and try not to strike with a guy like Vicente Luque. His nickname's the Silent Assassin. And when you look at what he's been able to do as of late, dominating an eye of, Nico Price, that famous photo now of Nico Price. And then, you know, a quick second round finish of Randy Brown, who's a durable guy at 170. So I just think, you know, you don't want to maybe try to mix it up with him. Go back to the wrestling. And I hope we see that. But if we don't, for sure, that style of fight kind of leans into what Vicente Luque wants to do.
Thank God for the one shot that allows me to stretch out all my aches and sores away from the peering eyes of the fans. Vicente Luque has messed some people up. We're talking Nico Price's eye. Let's not forget, he turned Mike Perry's nose into a troll doll. Yeah. Mike Perry looked like something that'd be living under a bridge after that fight. It's insanity. Hey, for Vicente Luque, this is the platform that gets him perhaps a number one contender shot. For Tyron, you know, I was listening to Rashad Evans talk to Luke Thomas on Morning Combat about this. It's like when you have a fractured relationship with the UFC, it doesn't give you a whole lot of breathing room in situations like this. I do think it's probably do or die. With the exception of Yoel Romero, I think the UFC generally holds on to these older guys longer, but Tyron probably has a very expensive contract. Hasn't really clicked with the audience a whole lot.
Especially during his title run, yeah. Right? Like, he turned a lot of people off when he was champion with, you know, feeling like he demanded a super fight when he had like a draw and not the best title defense against Stephen Thompson. And then it was like, I need a super fight. Like, no, yeah. No, you don't.
Yeah. So we'll see. I think he would be a good fit in Bellator. I would imagine that's where he would end up, just because of his, I imagine, you know, it seems like anyone who has ever worked even for a minute under Scott Coker has a good relationship with Scott Coker. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see him there. I think, you know, he obviously gets an immediate title fight. A great chance to, you know, either rebuild his career or give Douglas Lima a real marquee win that says, hey, I am the baddest welterweight on the planet. Good problem to have. I think Tyron Woodley will land on his feet no matter where he goes. You know, honestly, what worst case, if he wants to keep fighting, goes to PFL, probably makes a cool million.
Or he just retires in general. Like, he's in acting, right? Well, like, he's,
yeah, but I don't think he doesn't seem ready to retire on a loss. He retires if he beats Vicente tonight.
Yeah, I could see that for sure. If he wins that, then he retires and goes, makes his rap albums and continues to act. I don't know. He seems more interested in that than some of his fighting.
UFC fighters react to Tyron Woodley, Mike Perry, and more rapping. Go check it out. We will. It's on this channel. You can find it. All right, Jason, that is all the time we got for today. You've hinted about it a little bit during the show, but where can the people find you?
You can go search the podcast on YouTube that I do with Bellator, Bantamweight, The Gentleman, Josh Hill, called Jason and the Gentleman. Just look it up. We just kind of do what Shaq and I are doing now, break down all the news and recap the past week's UFC event, and then usually preview the upcoming cards. Got a lot to obviously recap coming up this week with UFC 260 and then the return of Bellator next Friday. So a lot going on.
All right. That is it for myself. You can find me on Twitter at Shaq Fu. If you're here on Fightful MMA and you haven't already, guys, please hit subscribe, tap the notification bell, leave a like on this video. Has a trickle-down effect. Even if you search for us every day or every week, that subscribe button helps YouTube say, hey, good work, guys. Let's show more people your stuff. So that'd be very much appreciated. Enjoy UFC 260. Watch us every week at Fightful Select. Time for that crappy outro. So stay tuned for everything Fightful and so delightful. Peace out.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.